Hello and welcome into another episode of Lockdown Wolves. Today on the show, let's talk more trade rumors. D'Angelo Russell, Kyle Lowry, and another name of a veteran point guard being floated as a possibility for the Wolves at the upcoming trade deadline. We'll break down that rumor, plus more on Jaden McDaniels' continued improvement and impressive defense of late. We'll close with a Wolves Nuggets preview for Wednesday night. It's all coming on the show. Welcome in. You are Locked On Wolves.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy hump day and happy Timberwolves game day. The Wolves are in Denver for a quick one-game road trip to take on the Nuggets. We'll preview that matchup at the end of the show. First, a big thank you here off the top for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Of course, this show is free and available everywhere, including YouTube, as well as all of your favorite audio platforms from Apple to Google, Spotify to Odyssey. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find this show. You can also watch on the Locked On Sports Minnesota app. That's on both Roku and Amazon Fire TV. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at BBeacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. All right, I want to start today with a bit of trade deadline talk. We're under 2 weeks away. Is that right now? Under 3 weeks away. So about 2.5 weeks or so away from the deadline, like February 9th, I think it is. We're to the point now where just rumors are flying everywhere. And of course, as always, the rumors are like, hey, this conversation's happening. And that's pretty much it, right? Until like the week of, and then things become much more real, usually. Obviously, the Wolves are looking to possibly trade D'Angelo Russell. We talked about his situation a couple weeks ago on the show. He's a free agent at the end of the season, and he has a $31 million expiring contract. Now, to clean something up, I said a couple weeks ago and correct a mistake, the Wolves do not get that full cap space if he walks this summer. They get much less than that. I think if they do some, actually, there was an article by Jake Fisher of Yahoo where he talked about how the Wolves could clear upwards of $21 million, but it would involve some work with the salary cap, right? You don't just straight get his $31.3 million salary slot, though, if he walks. So that's the primary reason the Wolves would be willing to trade him. Also, theoretically, you could maybe get something of value for him because he is expiring. Whoever acquires him will get that slot, right? That's just the weird NBA salary cap. So we talked about him as a possible trade option in a deal to get Kyle Lowry, whether it's directly with the Heat or there's a third team involved. I brought up on the show, I think Bill Simmons had said on his podcast a couple weeks ago, like, hey, could Toronto get involved? Russell goes to Toronto, Lowry goes to Minnesota, the Heat get some stuff for their troubles. That sort of a thing. Certainly possible. The name that's new to the conversation, let me back up a half step. So that's the primary reason this is a conversation, right? Because the Wolves don't get anything if Russell leaves in free agency, and there's no sign that they're interested, either party's too interested in an extension right now because of, surely Russell at that point would see what he's worth on the open market. The Wolves aren't going to pay what D'Lo thinks he can get, surely. So if the Wolves trade D'Lo, they obviously need a point guard. Minnesota's needs to be a playoff team, or at the very least at this point, a play-in team. As crazy as that is, that we're talking about that being a realistic possibility here in mid-January for a team that was supposed to be one of the four or five best teams in the West. But at any rate, if you trade out D'Lo, you have to get back somebody to play point guard, especially with Jordan McLaughlin hurt. There's nobody else on the roster that is actually a point guard. The Wolves have made it work for the last few weeks with a combination of Anthony Edwards running offense, Kyle Anderson, Jalen Noel, Austin Rivers. But that's not sustainable if there's also not like a lead guard who in your starting lineup, like in this case, D'Angelo Russell, but if he leaves, you need somebody to get somebody back, right? So the other name that's now been floated is Mike Conley. And this is the first place I saw this was Shams Charania of The Athletic had an article early on Tuesday that posted. He talks a little bit about D'Angelo Russell as the Wolves are exploring trade possibilities for Russell while prioritizing another point guard is what Shams says, right? So then at the end of the article, not under the Timberwolves section, under the Jazz section, Shams says the Timberwolves and Clippers are expressing interest in Jazz guard Mike Conley Jr. Conley, a well-respected veteran, blah, blah, blah. The Jazz are 5-7 without Conley and 18-17 with him in the lineup, for whatever that's worth. So that's interesting. Like, I don't know what that necessarily looks like. I mean, there's obviously plenty of possibilities, right? The Wolves could trade D'Lo and, like, I don't know, a second-round pick or somebody towards the end of the roster in a deal and take back Conley. You could make the salaries work there. That could work. I tend to think the Jazz could get more than an expiring contract for Mike Conley. And also, what are the Jazz going to do with that cap space this offseason? Like, Utah's not signing a max player probably ever in free agency. They don't have anybody that they're going to be giving that extension to at this point. So I don't know what they get out of that. I think you can trade Conley and get something more in return than simply D'Lo's expiring and call it a second rounder or Jalen Noel or somebody at, you know, to kind of add to the Jazz depth. And I guess at this point, wealth of draft picks and young talent, right? So that could be a good deal for the Jazz. That's something they'd maybe consider if Conley was an expiring himself, because then, you swap guards and you pick up another asset along the way. But Conley has a partially guaranteed deal for next year. So his partial guarantee is like almost 14 and a half million. But his full salary is 24.3 million. So the Wolves could get Conley back, pay him 24 million next year. You're not going to let him go for 14 million. That would make sense. So the Wolves would probably do that deal. I think in a vacuum, Conley is, you could argue he's a better player. I would argue that he's a better fit with a fully healthy Timberwolves team. I recognize that Conley and Gobert they worked in Utah to the extent that that entire Utah team worked in the regular season, but not in the playoffs. But I think Conley's a really good fit with Karl Anthony Towns. I think he's a really good fit with Anthony Edwards. In my mind, he's a little bit of at this point, not quite as good defensively as what Patrick Beverley was last year, but a better version of Patrick Beverley in a lot of ways, of last year's Pat Bev, not this year's kind of shell of a Pat Bev that we've seen unfortunately in a Lakers uniform. But I think Conley's a really nice fit. And at that price point, it's expensive for a guy who'll be, I think, 37 next year. But it's a good roster fit. And the Wolves would need a point guard if they trade D'Angelo Russell. That said, I like Kyle Lowry's fit a little bit better. And here's why. I think Lowry has a little bit of a better track record as both a three-point shooter. And at their peaks, you could argue that Conley was a better defender. But I think over the last couple of years, Lowry, most of the metrics point to Lowry being a better defender. I think that the eye test bears that out as well. I think he's a little bit craftier on that side of the ball than Conley. I think that Lowry's more comfortable being a lower usage option at this point in his career, although they both are this year as 36, 37-year-old point guards. But I like the Lowry fit a little bit more. Now the problem is Lowry also is getting paid a bit more than Conley is. Lowry makes, what, $29 million next year? Is that right? I believe $29 million next year. And yeah, $29.7 million next year, and it's fully guaranteed. So Conley's is $24 million. So roughly almost $5.5 million less for Conley. Plus, it's a partial guarantee if something were to happen. You know, if he really isn't a good fit or there's an injury or whatever, $14 million next year, guaranteed. So there's certainly more risk with Lowry. I think Lowry is a somewhat marginally better fit. No idea in terms of assets what it would take to get him. I do think that the Heat are more likely to be interested in D'Angelo Russell than the Jazz are. The Heat have been rumored to be interested, and who knows how true that is, but that's been out there in a couple different places that Miami might have some interest in D'Lo anyway. And at this point, who wants to trade with the Jazz if you're Minnesota, right? Like, I don't know. I don't know if that plays into it or not, but maybe it should. So the Lowry thing to me is a little bit more interesting. I said on the show, part of my second half predictions, I think it was last Wednesday's show, actually a week ago, I predicted that D'Lo would not be traded. I'm standing by that. I think, you know, it's disappointing because the Wolves will ultimately get nothing for him, assuming he's not back on some sort of extension, which would be a surprise, a pretty big surprise if he was, by the way. I don't think the Wolves will trade him. I don't think they'll be able to get requisite value. I think the Wolves have had enough change, enough upheaval, like, hey, let's see what happens. They've shown a couple of really nice peaks this year with D'Lo on the floor. D'Lo has helped carry the offense at times with no Towns and some of the other injuries the Wolves have had. So I think the Wolves kind of play it out with him and see what happens. They can create some cap space by being creative this summer. They have some other assets that they could trade, not trade assets, but potential trade candidates. Although part of my prediction was I didn't think the Wolves would make a trade at all next week. So, or I'm sorry, in the next 2.5 weeks prior to the deadline. So I'm going to stand by that. I don't think Russell gets traded. But if he is traded, I like Mike Conley. I'd be fine with Mike Conley. I think Kyle Lowry is a marginally better fit for the Wolves roster. It'll be something to keep an eye on here moving forward, because obviously anything could happen, and all it takes is one team to offer anything of value, really, in an exchange for D'Angelo Russell. And the Wolves would, without, because the whole thing here, even if Conley and Lowry are both better fits for the Wolves and arguably better players at this stage of their respective careers, which I understand that's controversial, but you could make that argument, certainly, the Wolves are then taking another year of salary for an aging guard. Each of those guys is having like their lowest scoring year basically ever since they were like rookies, Lowry and Conley, that is. So there is a lot of risk there still. Even if this season it's a better fit and might make your team better this year to have Lowry or Conley versus D'Angelo Russell, what happens now next year? And those are all things the Timberwolves front office has to weigh. They've obviously cashed in some chips from future years already. Like, do you want to continue adding, you know, late 30-year-old point guard salary onto your books if you're not getting much else in return out of it? All right. Next, I want to look at Jaden McDaniels, kind of celebrate what he's done here recently and his overall improvement to this point this season. So we're going to do that here next. First, though, let's talk about our friends over at Rocket Money. Today's episode is brought to us by Rocket Money. Say goodbye to last year's outdated, disorganized methods of managing your money and say hello to Rocket Money, the better way to hack your finances in 2023. Rocket Money, formerly known as Truebill, is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills all in one place. Over 80% of people have subscriptions that they forgot about, like that streaming service you bought to watch just one show on or that free trial that you never even used. Rocket Money will quickly and easily identify your subscriptions for you so you can stop paying for the ones that you don't want. Rocket Money makes canceling subscriptions as easy as a click of a button. Simply find the subscription you don't want and press cancel, and Rocket Money will cancel it for you. No more long hold times with customer service or tedious emailing back and forth. Over 3 million people have used Rocket Money, saving the average person up to $720 a year. I moved not too long ago. Rocket Money is the perfect tool for that sort of scenario. When you're moving, you have a bunch of subscriptions that you used, maybe some stuff at the old house that you're not going to get at the new house, et cetera. You reevaluate your streaming service situation, your cable situation, or whatever when you move to the new place. Rocket Money is the perfect solution for exactly that problem. Stop throwing your money away. Cancel unwanted subscriptions and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/lockdownNBA. That's rocketmoney.com/lockdownNBA. rocketmoney.com/lockdownNBA. All right, let's talk about Jaden McDaniels. It's only been a couple of weeks since we talked about him last. There's been a ton to say about Jaden of late, and Marty Gellner and I have talked about him almost every night, it seems like, for the last week or so on the postcast that we do about 45 minutes following every Timberwolves game. And it's for good reason. I mean, Jaden McDaniels has been one of the Wolves' best and surprisingly most consistent players of late. I mean, and I say surprisingly because if you've watched a lot of Wolves games over the last 2.5 years, you know that Jaden McDaniels is consistently inconsistent. We'll say that. But lately, he's been really, really good for the Wolves. He stayed out of foul trouble for the most part. I know that was a big deal against Utah the other night, and it was part of the reason the Wolves lost because he picked up his fifth foul with 10 minutes left in the game. Wolves are up 3 or 4 at the time, comes back with them down a possession, down 4, I think, with a minute and a half left, and the Wolves lose the game. But take that game out, right? And he's been really, really good. He had scored double figures in 4 consecutive games and in 5 out of 6. Before that, he had a stretch of 7 consecutive games where he scored double figures. And that was at a time when the Wolves were even more shorthanded than they are now. The 3-point shot has improved pretty consistently again. It's back closer to where he was as a rookie. Actually, ahead of where he was as a rookie. He was, what, 36.4% from 3 as a rookie. Last year, dipped to 30, under 32%. This year, he's just a shade under 39%. And, you know, this is, again, funny. We're talking about this right after he missed that wide-open corner 3 that would have won the game against Utah on losing track of days, whatever day that was, Monday afternoon. But overall, the shooting numbers are improved for McDaniels. Overall, The defensive numbers are improved for McDaniels. And over the last couple of years, people have talked about him as such a, you know, a great defender. As a rookie, we talked about that last year. And I've always been a little bit kind of like, okay, the tools are there, the size, the length, the athleticism, we get it. The instincts are pretty good. But the eye test doesn't back, or the, excuse me, the advanced metrics don't back up the profile of Jaden McDaniels, right? We're finally getting to the point where they do. And now I think the advanced metrics are actually underrating his defense. And here's why. Currently, Jaden McDaniels, on according to ESPN's Real Plus Minus statistic, which I really, really like, he's listed as a power forward. We can quibble about that later. He's currently 10th in defensive Real Plus Minus. Defensive Real Plus Minus, not overall, among power forwards. I think he's better than that. And the reason is because this metric and many others, I mean, you can look at WinShare's different box score metrics. They, I think, sometimes overrate or overweight, I guess, defensive rebounding. And McDaniels is a poor defensive rebounder. There's no other way around it. He is, which is an issue, but that drags down his overall defensive metrics, which then in turn makes it look like he's not as good of an individual defender as he actually is. In a one-on-one situation, Jaden McDaniels is fantastic. He's one of the best defenders in the entire league. If we're only looking at on-ball individual defense, he can guard most twos, most threes, most fours, many ones at an elite level. He's just that good. His anticipation skills are much better now. He's defending without fouling better. He's not to where he needs to be, but much better than he has in past years. Everything is there for Jaden McDaniels. It's the lack of defensive rebounding that's really bringing that overall, those advanced metrics down. And it's too bad because I think people, maybe nationally, the people that look at those types of numbers are perhaps still underrating Jaden McDaniels as an all-around player and specifically as a defender. We look at B-Ball Index, which is a fantastic tool, bball-index.com, a subscription service that has fantastic stats and really good breakdowns of some proprietary stats. They also compile like advanced stats from around the internet on their site and for their player profiles. They have something called defensive matchups by usage tiers defended. So Jaden McDaniels defends a usage tier one or two player. So the two highest tiers of usage, basically the guys that score the most or at least shoot the ball the most for opposing teams, he guards either tier one or tier two 51.9% of the time. So more than half the minutes that McDaniels is on the floor, he's actively guarding a tier one or tier two offensive player. And 31% or 30.9% of that is tier one. That's 98th percentile in the league guarding tier one defenders. So McDaniels, as Wolves fans know, is consistently given the most difficult assignment on any given night. And sometimes it's a two, sometimes it's a three, sometimes it's a four. McDaniels is asked to lock those guys down. And he's, for the most part, done that. We've seen him do a really good job against the Darius Garlands, the Donovan Mitchells. I mean, like, go on down the list. Luka Doncic, he's done a good job against. And McDaniels has more than held his own against some of the best players in the league. And again, on the one hand, the defensive rebounding needs to improve. On the other hand, I think that some of these metrics they consider defensive rebounding a little bit too much, and it kind of clouds judgment for people that don't watch him every night and just look at the advanced metrics. And you know, most good analysts are going to do both things, right? You're going to look at the advanced metrics. You're going to watch the film. You're going to understand that, like, hey, he individual defender wise, he's really, really good. What he has to work on is the defensive rebounding. But if people are just perusing stats, you're going to kind of gloss past McDaniels as a good defender and a negative offensive player. Well, the offense is improving as well. We talked about the 3-point percentage, but the assist rate is up, which is great to see. The turnover rate's up a little, but that's because he's had the ball in his hands a little bit more frequently. The offensive rebounding, by the way, is up a little bit. The free throw rate is up. The only thing I don't like is that the 3-point rate is down. Well, the percentage is up. And I think he's maybe a little bit too often put the ball on the deck, which I know is something the Wolves have wanted him to do more of. And you have to be a threat. You have to be able to do it. But a lot of times I'd rather him just let it fly from three. Now, I think overall the shot selection has been pretty good and he's been picking his spots nicely. But it's lent itself to a few too many turnovers and some not as efficient shots. But in general, the offense has improved for Jaden McDaniels this year. The defense is absolutely better. The steal rate's up to a career high at this point, 1.7%, which is pretty good. Block rate is higher than it was last year, a bit lower than he was as a rookie. But he's also I think a lot of those blocks as a rookie, he got beat off the dribble and used his length and athleticism to catch up and get chase down blocks. He hasn't needed to do that as much this year. He's just played straight up and stayed in front of guys and used his length in that way. So fantastic improvement so far this season for Jaden McDaniels. The sky truly is the limit for him, especially defensively. And you know, I don't think it's wrong to say he's an elite on-ball defender already at this stage. And oh, by the way, Anthony Edwards is a good on-ball defender. They both have a little bit of work to do off the ball, especially Edwards. But if the Wolves have these two guys moving forward, that's two plus defenders in your backcourt. Even if Rudy Gobert begins to decline, and I recognize that's a whole other can of worms to talk about because, well, we know why. But if he's a plus defender, even if he's not the best defender in the league, you have three plus defenders in your starting lineup. That's going to give you a pretty good baseline for your team defense. And of course, we've seen that. We've seen the Wolves team defense generally be much better lately, Monday against Utah notwithstanding. They're currently 13th in the league in defensive rating. So it's been a good defense, but it has the upside to be a great defense here if these guys continue to improve defensively on an individual basis. And then the team becomes a more cohesive unit like we saw the second half of Saturday's win over Cleveland when they were just unbelievable defensively for the final 15 minutes or so of that game. But at any rate, McDaniels has been really good, and it's been a lot of fun to see him grow in terms of consistency here in recent weeks. All right, let's close the show by looking at this Wolves-Nuggets matchup on Wednesday night. Today's episode of Locked On Wolves is brought to us by our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every pro and amateur league out there. From pro football to college sports, including college basketball, we're in the thick of the conference schedule right now for basketball. The Golden Gophers playing a little bit better of late, by the way. They've got it all at BetOnline.net. They've got really all sports, NHL. I talked to Super Bowl prop bets are so much fun. NFL playoffs, of course, ongoing currently. If you love sports podcasts, you can also find those at BetOnline. They're the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info. Head to their website today or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, the Timberwolves are in Denver for a weird 9 p.m. Central tip, which of course is 8 p.m. Mountain Time where the Wolves are playing, but it's an ESPN game. And by the way, Marty and I talked about this, I think off air after the game the other night, that then the Wolves turn around and play at 7 p.m. at Target Center, the rare Thursday game that's also not a national TV game. So we're talking, I mean, what is that, 22 hours between tip times? So the Wolves will get done playing in Denver and have... It's an ESPN game, so it'll go closer to 3 hours. So we'll round down and we'll call it 19 hours between the end of Wednesday's game and the start of Thursday's game, plus traveling from Denver to Minnesota, probably getting in at, I don't know, 2:30 local time and then turning around and playing 7 p.m. Thursday. It's not great from a travel perspective. It is a back-to-back for Denver. As I'm recording this, Denver is currently playing. They're against Portland. They're playing Portland in Denver. They're up 10 with about 8 minutes to play as I'm recording this. So Denver very well could be on, I believe, a 7-game win streak, if I'm not mistaken. And if they hang on to beat Portland, yeah, it's a 7-game win streak. It would be a 7-game win streak. And their last loss was to Minnesota. So this would be 7 straight wins following their loss to Minnesota. I should also say that that Nuggets head coach Michael Malone is out due to health and safety protocols, or at least he is on Tuesday. I've lost track of how the protocols work this year. I don't think that he would be likely to coach on Wednesday, or I don't know for sure that he's going to coach Wednesday. I don't know for sure that Malone won't coach Wednesday because of the way protocols are now. I'm not really sure, but he's not coaching Tuesday because of COVID protocols. At any rate, the Nuggets will very likely be winners of 7 straight when they come to Minnesota. The last time these two teams played, of course, the Wolves did win. And Minnesota was up 6 at halftime of that game, up only 6 going to the fourth quarter, but they were able to hang on late. Remember, Jokic was a bit sloppy in that game at 24-9-7, but he had the 5 turnovers. The Wolves did a pretty good job frustrating him and just trying to be physical, muck things up, jump passing lanes, etc. It was really just Bones Highland got hot at one point. Michael Porter Jr. had a nice game. Those were kind of really the only players that hurt the Wolves consistently. Minnesota bothered Denver into a really difficult overall offensive night. 14 turnovers, only 46% from the field for Denver, which is uncharacteristically poor for them on that end of the floor. Remember, Denver's not like a phenomenal defensive team. They're currently 18th in defensive rating, and they were much lower. I think they were like mid-20s when the Wolves saw them, but they're on this big win streak, of course. And the offense has been so good over the last couple of weeks for Denver. But the Wolves were the last team that got the best of them. Ants had 29, 10, and 5 in the last matchup against Denver. Gobert had a quiet game, 8 and 4. Jaden McDaniels, who we just spent a whole segment on, was fantastic. 21 points on 9 of 10 shooting. Made both of his three-point attempts, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and a block in that game, and tied for a team best plus 13, plus minus. I should also note that D'Angelo Russell did not play in that game. I can't remember what it was. If it was, I think it might have been an illness, or he tweaked something. I can't remember. But Jalen Noel started that game for the Wolves. So this was a no D'Lo, obviously no Cat game for Minnesota. The starting lineup was Noel, Edwards, McDaniels, Anderson, and Rudy Gobert. And basically everyone in the starting lineup shot the ball extremely efficiently. In fact, everyone is 50% or better besides Edwards. And Edwards scored 29 and 24 shots, which isn't awful. The bench for the Wolves, Austin Rivers played a ton of minutes off the bench for Minnesota. And this was one of the first good Luka Garza games, 9-6 in this game off the bench, because Naz Reid also was out with back spasms. So no Naz, no D'Lo the last time these two teams played, and the Wolves won by 13. Go figure. Again, the biggest things in this matchup, Denver, like if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to outscore them. Denver's a fantastic three-point shooting team. They don't shoot a lot. They're like sixth to last in the league in three-point attempt rate. 24th, I guess would be a better way to say that. They're first in percentage. They're just a hair under 40% coming into play on Tuesday, in terms of their three-point percentage. Like we saw Bones Highland go nuts against the Wolves last time. Michael Porter Jr., both those guys are over 40%. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope continues to shoot the lights out, 47.6% so far this year. Bones Highland was questionable against Portland. I don't actually know if he ended up playing, so there's a chance he doesn't play, but he was a big issue against the Wolves. Otherwise, they're mostly healthy. Jeff Green's been out since about Christmas, but Denver's mostly healthy. Of course, Jokic is trying to make a push for a third consecutive MVP award, so he's averaging nearly a triple-double and is just impossible to stop. Although, again, the Wolves did a pretty good job against him last time. So the keys for this game, limit the second-chance points. Again, Denver's 12th in offensive rebound rate. Guard the three-point line. Denver doesn't shoot a lot of threes, but if you leave them open, they're going to make them. They're first in three-point percentage. Those are the two biggest things for the Wolves in this game. And also, if at all possible, speed the game up. The Wolves like to play fast, although the pace has slowly gone backwards this year. I think they were, you know, first or second last year in pace, and then they were third for a long time this year, top three, four. Now they're down to eighth in pace, but Denver's 20th. So if you can get Denver to play faster, speed them up, that's great. As long as you get back in transition yourselves and you limit Denver's three-point opportunities in transition so that they don't get those open looks that they'll inevitably knock down, that's the other piece of that, right? So control the defensive glass, limit second-chance opportunities, guard the three-point line, get out in transition and get those easy buckets, but get back in transition to not allow Denver and their lethal three-point shooters to get open looks from three. All right, we'll go live after the game with the postcast with Marnie. It will be probably after midnight here, Central Time, but we're still going to go live, so be sure to tune in. That's on Locked On Sports Minnesota on YouTube, so subscribe to the Locked On Sports Minnesota channel. Check it out there, and then also the audio will post on the Locked On Wolves audio feeds after the fact. We'll do a full post-game podcast as well. That'll post Thursday. We'll also peek ahead at Thursday night's game at Target Center. The Wolves have that two games in 22 hours or whatever. So we'll do that too on Thursday. A big thank you to those of you that do make Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Of course, this show is free and available everywhere, including YouTube, as well as all of your favorite audio platforms. You can watch on the Locked On Sports Minnesota app on Roku or Amazon Fire TV. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at B Beacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. Of course, the Locked On Wolves podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. Now make your second listen the NBA Game to Game podcast. Every moment, every top performance, every result. Locked On Game to Game covers every game from across the NBA with local analysis that only Locked On can deliver. Follow Game to Game on Locked On NBA. Available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcast. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.